Hello and welcome to the first episode of Fantasy Forecast from the Tower. I am your co-host, Travis Yates.
Hey, co-host, man. I want to just call you the lead host. I am your co-host, Lydia Cruz.
We are here talking all things fantasy football, and we're starting you off right smack in the middle of the early throes of the NFL, heading into week three. Mm-hmm. You know, we could have started this early, but let's get a feeling out process, see what's happening in the league here first, so we can pat each other on the back for our awesome drafts.
Exactly.
We're here to give you fantasy tips. We're here to give you pick'em picks. We're talking players, buy low, sell high, breaking news, everything that you want, coming to you every Thursday from our QUTV studios at North Campus.
Yes, our humble studios.
Humble studios. All right, so let's just jump right into it with some breaking news. I'll start with some news out of the AFC. And we've got a Thursday night game tonight, and it is the Houston Texans versus the New England Patriots. And the question is, who's going to suit up at quarterback, and who, most importantly, who's going to be the backup? And there was talk that Jimmy Garoppolo might be able to suit up for tonight, and now the news is out that he will not be suiting up. So Jacoby Brissett, the third-string quarterback, getting his first NFL start. And the backup quarterback is your wide receiver, Julian Edelman.
Whew, are you kidding? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. How much faith do you have in Belichick, though? Like, I think he could field any – I think he could put anybody out there, and I would trust him to score touchdowns.
I almost hope – I never wish ill will on anyone.
Yeah.
But I almost hope that Brissett – somehow needs to leave the game.
Right.
So Edelman gets in there, throws a touchdown or two. I think the real question is, how far down the depth chart can we get and have New England keep winning games?
Exactly. I mean, it's impressive.
It is. The word on the street for Jimmy Garoppolo is it's a grade 2 AC joint injury for you medical nerds out there. What that basically means is he's out 2 to 4 weeks, so Brady will be back before Garoppolo is healed up. So it is the Jacoby Brissett show in New England tonight.
Wow.
Or, yes.
The maybe the Edelman show.
Maybe the Edelman show for Lucky.
Awesome. Well, for the NFC, we've got, well, everywhere has been riddled with injuries, let's be honest, especially in the running back position. I think Sunday we had 7 different running backs go down with different injuries, different varying consequences for those. Right now, I would say the biggest impact for fantasy players is probably Amir Abdullah has been placed on injured reserve. So out there in Motor City, there's going to be some shuffling of the cards. I'd say, well, I can give you that advice later about who to pick up in the waiver, who's going to be impacted there. But definitely the Lions are having some struggles, and they just added to them.
You know, some teams just get all the breaks and some teams just do not. No. And the Lions are one of those teams, I feel, that they just do not. And Amir Abdullah, off to a so-so start. Fantasy-wise, had a decent first week with a receiving touchdown. Not the bell cow running back, that elusive bell cow back, but still a nice flex play. And now they're looking elsewhere. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. We've got some other injury news. The Browns, speaking of cursed teams, the Browns woes continue. Rookie wide receiver Corey Coleman coming off a breakout game versus Baltimore with 5 catches for 104 yards and 2 touchdowns. He will miss 4 to 6 weeks, breaking his hand in practice.
I heard about that. That's awful.
Not even in a game, just in practice.
It's still better than, you know, a fireworks incident on the 4th of July or something like that, but
it is.
Ouch.
It is. So, you know, who is going to suit up for the Browns at wide receiver is the question here, with Josh Gordon still out on suspension. So we'll talk about that a little later as well. Anything else breaking out of your world?
Other injury news. I could just run through a few here. Jay Cutler, of course, hurting his thumb on Monday Night Football, also his pride. That's actually why I think he's sitting out, is just wounded pride.
Wounded pride. Does that
purely
make him
quite?
Yeah, how do you put that down on the injury report?
Right? Also, Alshon Jeffrey in Chicago has got a knee issue. He's questionable. He was limited at practice yesterday, so just kind of following that. And also, I forgot to mention, big news, Adrian Peterson, as we all know, went down on Sunday. They forced him to walk out awkwardly through their new stadium club / food court that they've got going on there at US Bank. Anyway, that's a rough blow for Minnesota. They still did pretty well when he wasn't on the field, but be monitoring that situation too.
You have to wonder if we've seen the last of AP.
I know.
In purple.
Yeah, that is a good... what is he, 30 now?
He's 30 at least.
Yeah, which in running back age is like with 90.
With a lot of mileage.
Yes.
A lot of mileage. One last little injury note. The Gronk, Rob Gronkowski, he's been telling his teammates that he's going to play tonight, going back to tonight's game. But, you know, Martellus Bennett's coming off a big game. Mm-hmm. And so if he does play, and I do expect him to be out there, they need all the help they can get tonight versus the Texans. But he'll probably be on a limited snap count, I would imagine.
I would hope so.
We'll see how we'll see how that goes. All right, let's move on to waiver ads. You know, most seasons you don't win the championship with the team that you actually drafted, and you need a little help from a friend. Let us be that friend. You know, we're here to help. We're here with some waiver ads for the week that might help you get over the hump this week, and or might even help you win your title in the long run. So. I'm going to start at the key position here in football at the quarterback. And I've been impressed with Ryan Fitzpatrick of the Jets.
Oh, yes.
I had my doubts coming into the season. He wasn't sure if he was coming back. The Jets as a whole, you weren't sure. Mm-hmm. Matt Forte, you've got a lot of tread on that tire. So you weren't sure what that offense was going to look like as a whole. He's off to a good start, 563 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interceptions through 2 games. And he's only owned in 36% of ESPN leagues.
Yeah.
So he's probably out there if you're needing a little help at quarterback.
That seems like a crime. I actually relied heavily on Ryan Fitzpatrick as my second quarterback last year.
You gave me that look like,
right, like
there's
you're
some
crazy.
Loyalty there.
You're
there's
crazy.
Well, no, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Now I'm saying he's there. Go grab him.
He is. And I'm one of those people that unless I get the elite three or, the, you know, quarterbacks in the draft, you can put up good numbers with somebody like Ryan Fitzpatrick. So definitely if you're hurting at the quarterback position, I recommend.
I won a championship several years ago with Sage Rosenfels at quarterback. So I am a believer.
Wow. Okay, good.
In the scrap heap quarterback. And I think that we've got a gem right here. So that's
awesome.
My first waiver ad.
At the QB position, I'm going to go with an unpopular one. I'm going to say Ryan Tannehill, who's owned in, I think, only about 5% of leagues, which makes sense. Miami is off to a rough start. Mm-hmm. They're going to have some struggles, but they are facing the Browns at home. And I think if they are going to have that breakout game, it's going to be this game.
So I see Fitzpatrick as a long-term solution if you need some help at quarterback. Are you seeing Tannehill as just for the week?
I'm seeing Tannehill as a use him and lose him.
There you
yeah.
go. All right, sounds good. You know, tight end is always a conundrum. Even if you have Gronk, you're dealing with injury issues. You know, you are. So got a couple guys at the tight end position. And you know, much like the quarterback position, if you don't get those couple top three guys, mm-hmm. then you're kind of just constantly on a search, it seems like. So off to a surprising start this year is Jacob Tammy for the Falcons.
Right.
I think he's tied for the team lead in targets, so Matt Ryan is looking his way.
Mm-hmm.
Julio Jones already banged up a little bit, so Tammy has 11 catches, 126 yards, and a touchdown through 2 games, and he's available in about half of ESPN's leagues.
Wow.
So there's one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dennis Pitta, making a long comeback. Again, I think we've got a loyalist here.
Well, that was my pick, actually.
Oh, okay.
I was
going to
say.
Tell us why.
I just said he had an incredible game last week. 20% owned, at least in Yahoo leagues. And he's just a high floor tight end. I think, I mean, I don't really trust Joe Flacco that much. But when he does put up numbers, I think that this is going to be his go-to person. So.
He used to be a favorite target of Flacco, and
yeah.
then now 2 years back from injury. So rooting for the guy.
Me too. Yeah.
And so we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I think the big game, I think, is a sign of things to come. So he might be a good fill-in for mm-hmm. you at the position. I've got a real, real dark horse here at running back.
Yes. Well, that's what's happening this year. Running backs are hard to come by, so you're going to have to dig deep.
And this is not a starter, But the way he might be used, San Diego, the injury bug has hit hard there as well.
Absolutely.
And their top two receiving targets, Keenan Allen, of course, but then Danny Woodhead also. Their receiving back, do-it-all-purpose back. He's gone. So the team has dusted off Dexter McCluster, street free agent, and he is familiar with Ken Wisenhunt from his days in Tennessee. So there is a connection there already. So if they use him the way they used Woodhead, this is a sleeper pick that may come back to help you out in the long run. He has 229 career receptions and nearly 2,000 yards receiving. So he's no stranger to being a third down style back.
And does he have the receiving skills? Is he that style play? Okay.
He does. He's known. He's been used at receiver sometimes as well as running back. So very much like Woodhead. He can operate out of the slot. He might not have the pass blocking skills that Woodhead has. So there's some concerns there. So we'll see what happens. But if you're really, really desperate, Dexter McCluster's your man.
Which most people are at this point.
Right.
In the running back position, I would say Theo Riddick is going to benefit strongly this week from Ameer Abdullah going down. He's owned in about 20% of leagues, at least when I did the research. It might have gone up a little bit in the last day or two. Jerick McKinnon is also another pick out of Minnesota, but they are playing a very tough defense this week, so I would keep that in mind.
Not to mention, if they follow what they've done in the past when Peterson is out, it's the dreaded running back by committee. Splitting carries with Matt Asiata, and then now newly signed Ronnie Hillman.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yes, so now we might have a three-headed monster. Ronnie Hillman, of course, led the Broncos in rushing last year with more than 800 yards. So, you know, he's no slouch either. So we could see a quite a few backs used at various times in Minnesota, and when you get those timeshares, that's dangerous.
It can be really like feast or famine, especially in the red zone. I know McKinnon's not really a traditional red zone back, so he would get poached probably a lot there. So, again, desperation might lead you down that road, but hopefully pretty desperate at that point.
I do like the Riddick pickup, though, as well. You know, he caught 80 balls last year. Yeah. That's for a running back. That's great, and not even as the starting running back, but their third down back. And now he'll get more carries out of the backfield as well. I have one more. Quincy Anunua, the Jets. I'm just on the Jets bandwagon right now.
Yes,
You've got Eric Decker. You've got Brandon Marshall. It's Quincy Anunua leading the team in receptions right now with 13. So he's getting the looks. They run a unique offense where it's primarily a three wide receiver set. They don't really use a tight end there. So he is essentially the starting tight end. He doesn't qualify as a tight end, unfortunately, so you still have to use him as a wide receiver or a flex. But he's got 146 yards receiving, one touchdown. And we'll get into Brandon Marshall a little later as well as that and how it affects Anunua's stock. But I like him at wide receiver.
Awesome.
All right, so we're 2 weeks in. We're starting to get a sense of, you know, who the guys are on our team, what they're capable of, where they're going, what the trajectory is. Let's talk about some buy low, sell high guys. Who's the bargain guys that we might be able to poach in a decent trade, maybe rob our competitors blind here, or maybe somebody on our team that we're thinking now's the time. Now's the time to dump. So I've got my first buy low candidate, Allen Robinson, wide receiver from the Jags.
Interesting.
The Jaguars are off to a very slow start offensively, and Robinson, after his huge year last year, only has 9 catches and no touchdowns through 2 games. Their offense will get back on track.
Absolutely.
And their running game is poor right now. Chris Ivory has been out, so if they get that back on track, and even if they don't get their running game back on track, that means they're throwing the ball a lot. So either way, I think that Allen Robinson benefits. So if you're looking for help at wide receiver, and you've got somebody that's frustrated with his production, now is the time to offer a really sneaky deal. You might be able to get him at a cheap price.
I'd absolutely agree with that. I'm a huge Blake Bortles fan, actually. I mean, another quarterback that got me through last year at some points. And while he has Allen Hurns to compete with and stuff over there, especially in the red zone, they're not going to really give the ball to T.J. Yeldon to carry. He's not a traditional red zone back either. So I think that is a really smart pick.
another guy that's this, he's a superstar in the making in the league, so it's surprising that he's on my list. But again, I think if you can get him at the right time, Todd Gurley.
Oh, yeah.
Is just the Rams in general are off to a poor start. Now you, as a Seahawks fan, will say, well,
I can be objective. I can be objective, though.
But they still haven't. Gurley has less than 100 yards rushing and no touchdowns through two games.
Crazy.
Now, all of the people that picked him in the top five or at least the first round, they were expecting production much different than that. And you might have somebody ready to just wash their hands, worried that this offense is just not going to get going.
Mm-hmm.
And again, fantasy football is a long game, and you need to plan for weeks 13 through 16 for those playoffs. And so Gurley's not doing so hot now. That's fine. He'll get going by season's end.
He's young. He's hardworking. So, yeah, I agree with that, too.
All right. So how about some guys that we might want to sell high?
Ooh.
Who can we still maybe rob blind by dumping some guys or getting more than they're worth in a trade? So these might be a little controversial here, but it's early in the season, and so because of that, that kind of plays into why I've got guys on this list. So my first sell-high candidate is Lamar Miller, Houston running back.
Absolutely.
Okay, he was kind of the golden boy heading into the draft this year. Everybody had really high hopes for him. I saw him in the running as you know, after Peterson and Gurley, maybe the number three running back up there with David Johnson, expecting a lot of carries in a high-powered offense in Houston. And it's not really happening right now, but he still has that golden boy shine. You mentioned Lamar Miller, and people might be like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing they're working him hard. He's a smaller running back, so you might see him break down later in the season. And you know, we're seeing good production out of him, 100 yards, but we're not seeing that superstar production that perhaps people thought drafting him as the third running back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that he might be a good sell-high candidate if you get good value for him.
Absolutely. I think when he was at Miami, he put up good numbers too, but I think he also had some injury issues. So that's always on your, like you said, smaller running back, that's always on your mind. That might be a good idea to get him off your bench right now and get something for him.
And my last sell high candidate, Brandon Marshall, wide receiver for the Jets.
Oh, Brandon.
And yeah.
I know. No, yeah.
He's coming off a big game. Six catches, 101 yards versus Buffalo, but he tweaked his knee. He's missed practice all week long. He's 32 years old. And I feel like we're picking on the old guys here.
No.
But in football, like
that's
you
what
said,
you have to do.
That's up there. And so I think that now that we're seeing the emergence of Quincy Enunwa, we're seeing less emphasis on Brandon Marshall. And so I think that now is the time to sell if you can get something of decent price for Brandon Marshall.
I'd agree. I didn't have any prepared, but I'm gonna try my best, especially in the NFC, which I'm a little bit more familiar with being a Seahawks fan. Speaking of Seahawks, we had a ton of injuries this past week. Thomas Rawls, Jimmy Graham, Nick Vannette. We've also CJ Procise. Our running back core, our tight end core is depleted. This is the point I would say, if you could pick up someone like Thomas Rawls, who's been kind of disappointing at the beginning of the season, I have faith in him, and I also would pick up Jimmy Graham if possible. I'll say that I got to watch practice a couple times this past summer, and he looked incredible. And once our offense, we've just been typically known as a second half of the season team. Once they get it together, I think both of those guys are going to put up big numbers. So,
the strange case of Jimmy Graham, he went from the right up there with Gronk as the highest rated tight end in fantasy football to going undrafted in some leagues at tight end. It's crazy. And is it a case of Seattle not knowing how to use him right, or just not emphasizing the tight end as much in their offense, or injuries? I know he's battled injuries over the past 2 years now.
I think that he's been utilized incorrectly up until this point. I honestly don't think of him as a tight end. I think of him as a wide receiver who can block. And I think that Seattle's starting to figure that out too. And Pete Carroll is going to utilize him in that way. And once he's just a wide receiver and they're not trying to do that, I think his numbers are going to improve.
So let's talk about some games that we've got coming up here. Let's talk about some other types of fantasy. A lot of people are in the Pick'em Leagues, whether it's a Survivor League, pick one and you're out, or you get a certain amount of points for the games that you pick right. So let's talk about some Pick'ems for those fans of those style of games. I've got a couple AFC games that I'll talk about, and then I'll turn it over to you for the AFC. The first one, you know, usually you've got some of the obvious candidates that stand out. But this one's a little not so much obvious, but 2-0-2 teams going at it. You've got Cleveland at Miami. Two terrible offenses.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned with Tannehill earlier, and then, of course, their running woes with Arian Foster out. Who's going to run the ball? Jay Ajayi, who didn't even make the trip to Seattle in week one. Mm-hmm. So I think Miami's a 9.5-point favorite right now. That game is in Miami. And I do think that they beat Cleveland only because of the number of injuries. Cleveland's on their third quarterback. Cody Kessler.
Yes.
Starting
at
quarterback. The USC rookie starting at quarterback for the Browns. And who is he throwing to? Terrell Pryor is his number one receiver this week. So I like Miami to pull this one out in a very ugly fashion.
I'd agree. Even if it's a defensive game and the defense scores your points, I would agree with you. Earlier you were talking to me about the 9 points is a bit much. I would say it might be a little closer than that, but still, Miami.
Yeah. But this is Cleveland we're talking about, yeah. So maybe that 9 points is right on. And then the other game that I have is Baltimore at Jacksonville. And I like Baltimore to go over this Jacksonville in this game. They're only favored by 1.5 points. Jacksonville, they're just a mess right now, offensively and defensively. Mm-hmm. And Gus Bradley is a defensive-minded coach, so I'm surprised that their defense isn't doing more. There have been quite a few teams that I've been surprised defensively with their struggles. Oakland specifically, not to go off on a tangent here. When I looked at what they've done and who they brought in and who they've drafted and Bruce Irvin now to pair with Khalil Mack, I thought this defense is going to be one to watch. They are right now through two games historically bad. So I was off the mark with that.
Bruce Irvin ruffles some feathers because in preseason he said this is the best defense he's ever played on. So I was also expecting big things, but.
Yeah, so look for, as Jacksonville tries to put it together, Baltimore right now is on a roll. They're getting some key pieces back. Dennis Pitta is back with Flacco, so I like Baltimore in that game.
Okay, awesome. I am going to look at a few NFC games, and I won't pick the Seahawks because obviously I'm too biased to be commenting on the Seahawks, and you're perhaps too biased to be commenting on the Bengals. let's see. Let's talk about Carolina and where'd we go? Who are they playing? Who are they playing? The Vikings. That's right.
Yes.
Carolina, the Vikings. I think it's actually in favor of. Oh, sorry. It's at Carolina. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So I didn't check the point spread, so I don't know. But I would guess that Carolina's at least decently favored.
Yeah, I feel like it's not a huge spread, but I feel like it's 1.5, maybe something like that.
Okay, cool. I mean, the Vikings are coming off a great performance last week, but let's remember that this was at home. This was in their new stadium. AP is down. Sam Bradford is Sam Bradford, and he could get hurt getting on the plane to go there. So let's be honest. Carolina playing at home against Cam Newton, I don't think this would be a shocker for Carolina to win this one. And although I will say the Vikings defense has looked great, but I don't think they're enough to stop Cam Newton, possible MVP.
This is one of the games that I have highlighted to discuss a little later, and so we'll just jump into it now because I am interested in this game for that very reason of the Vikings are having to reinvent themselves on the fly. Yep. Completely with a new quarterback and then now a new shift in focus on offense from the rushing game to the passing game. And they've got some of the pieces in place. If you can keep Sam Bradford healthy, which they almost didn't do last week, he had the issue with the hand and got knocked around a bit. Stephon Diggs, wide receiver, is coming off a big game, and I expect big things from him. So we're starting to see that connection unfold. If they can get some consistency in the running game out of their multiple backs that they plan on utilizing, I could still see them making a run for the playoffs. And so from a fantasy point of view, specifically with Diggs, and then Bradford too, if you're to that point where you've got Sam Bradford as your quarterback, you might see some things. But I agree, just going into Carolina and against a team that's the defending NFC champions, and mm-hmm. with that defense, and they've got injuries of their own. They're down a running back, so they're looking at Fozzie Whitaker as their
also a good pickup if you need.
Hey,
you
that's
need
right,
it.
That's right. And coming up 100 yards, so, but yeah, I expect the Vikings to give it a good fight,
mm-hmm.
but the Panthers will walk out with that one.
What do you think? Like 27-24.
Maybe a little wider margin than that.
Okay.
31-24.
Okay, I like
something
it.
Something like that. Yeah.
The other game that I had on my radar was the LA Rams at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is favored probably by, five points. Part of me just really wants to see the Rams return to classic Ram form. And okay, yes, I am a biased Seattle fan, but I have never understood how Jeff Fisher has remained in that position with consistent mediocrity. And so I'm curious to see if this is the start of, have they really rebranded themselves? Are they behind Todd Gurley? Are they moving forward? Have they turned a new chapter? 91,000 fans showed up to the Coliseum. Is this their new start? Or is he going to return to form and start to fail miserably? I definitely don't think that they've got a great defense. I don't think it's any match for Jameis, or he looks leaner and better this year. And I definitely give that one to Tampa Bay.
I like that as well. And we talked about this earlier too, with the Jeff Fisher. if you watch Hard Knocks on HBO, you probably saw the scene where he stood in front of the team and yelled at him saying, "I'm not going 7-9 or 8-8. And I thought, well, really? Because that's all you've done so far is gone 7-9 and 8-8. And how do you still have a job? It is. And I like Jeff Fisher from a personal standpoint. Grew up watching the 85 Bears, and he was on the early Bears teams. Mm-hmm. I think that his time in LA will be coming to an end at the end of the season, perhaps. I don't see a whole lot of excitement in that team this year, and I think that they return to classic Rams football, as you say, this weekend in
yes.
Tampa as well.
And we all know that LA is the fairest weather of fair weather fans, so we don't just say that because the St. Louis area lost the Rams and we're not better. That's a true proven fact, as you've seen with the Lakers, and attendance was miserable.
Absolutely.
Sears.
How long until the shine comes off
exactly.
of that team? Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the upcoming games now. We've got, of course, the game tonight. This is going to be fun from the standpoint of, like I said, Jacoby Brissett making his debut and what's going to happen with that whole situation there. I expect a lot out of LeGarrette Blount tonight.
Oh, man. When do you not, though? I mean, he's always exciting to watch. I have my issues with him coming off as a UW fan and having a kind of bitterness towards Oregon. I saw him as kind of a punk and attitude problems, but man, is he fun to watch.
You have to, it's, if you're a fan of football, you almost have to separate a lot of times the players from the game itself,
mm-hmm.
and just enjoy watching them play, and then also understand that a lot of these guys are not they're human, very human in the case of mm-hmm. LeGarrette Blount. I loved him coming out of school. He looked like a man among boys, running over people, just demolishing people, and I couldn't wait to see him in the NFL. And he's at times been a little underwhelming, but at times, like last week, you see the LeGarrette Blount that we expected to get, and he's fun to watch when he's in that mode.
And I think he enjoys proving people wrong is part of it too, because people have told him several times, no, you can't do this. No, you can't be a part of my program. And he's proven them wrong. So
The game is in New England tonight, but I see Houston pulling off the win.
I really do.
I think that you've got a pretty high-powered offense in the making with Houston with those pieces. You've got the strong arm in Brock Osweiler, mm-hmm. two great targets in DeAndre Hopkins, and now Will Fuller coming off two 100-yard receiving games as a rookie. So you've got the deep threat. Like we mentioned earlier, you do have Lamar Miller, who's putting up decent numbers, mm-hmm. so you're getting some consistency at the running game. I think it's going to be a shootout, and I think that if Garoppolo had been in there, they win.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't know until we see tonight if Jacoby Brissett is up to it, but that's asking a lot of a young quarterback who was third stringer, not even the backup, but the third stringer.
I'm going to put my faith in just the general Bill Belichick machine and just say that I think New England takes it. But you're right. I think Houston's going to give them a definite run for their money. It's a great defense. It's an upcoming offense that DeAndre Hopkins is just ridiculous. I swear there's just glue on his hands every time. And it's hard to bet against them, but it's Belichick.
It is.
Houston's headsets will start to not work. They'll have that magic interference come over the radios. And yeah. Patriots will take it.
I didn't consider the
mysterious
Belichick factor, but that's always out there. Absolutely, yeah. And again, I expect to see Gronk out there on the field, but probably not a whole lot.
Yeah.
So maybe just in the red zone, probably. no Braxton Miller going tonight. So if you've got Braxton Miller, he's out with an injury. So only one rookie wide receiver for Houston, not two out there tonight. So. The other game that I liked was moving on to Sunday's games. The game I was looking forward to, I already mentioned to you, was the Minnesota Carolina game, your pick 'em game. Mm-hmm. I would like to see what would happen if Jerick McKinnon got the ball 20 times. Can he hold up? Is he a Lamar Miller type? He's fast and he can catch the ball.
Very explosive.
And they haven't given him the chance to be the bell cow, to be that guy. I'd like to see them try. You know, Matt Asiata is a good goal line back, but he's certainly not explosive. He's going to get you 3 yards consistently. That doesn't cut it in the NFL. So I'd like to see Jerick McKinnon get a shot, or maybe Ronnie Hillman comes in, not this week, but in a few weeks perhaps, and they try to make him the guy. But watching how that team reinvents itself against one of the best defenses in the league, it'll be fun to watch.
I agree. In a world where NFC could play NFC, that would be, in my mind, a Super Bowl contender right there that I could watch. I'm trying to think what else. If you don't mind talking about the Bengals game, because I know that you're going this weekend. Can you give me get a little preview of that?
Yeah, it's our home opener in Cincinnati, mm-hmm. so you're going to have a pretty electric stadium. It's the jungle. We call it the jungle. So coming off of another tough loss to Pittsburgh, as all of them are, but another fumble in the within 2 minutes. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I hate to be hopeful, but I think that Andy Dalton as a quarterback has turned the page as far as making poor choices, and I think he's really developed as a leader. I think we're catching Denver beat up. Demaryius Thomas mm-hmm. is dealing with a bum hip. We've got some players out. DeMarcus Ware is out, and so we might get lucky here. I mean, they are the defending Super Bowl champions. They do have a great defense, even with wear out. So it should be a fun game. I expect two pretty good defenses, but I actually expect a high-scoring game. I think that both teams are going to be looking for big plays early and often. And so that has a trickle-down effect. You mm-hmm. know, there's a one and then another and then another, and the next thing you know, it's 24-24. So it'll be a good game.
What about AJ? Is he going to be kind of – I mean, he was pretty silent last week. Is he
– Yeah, I think that he'll be fine. And he and his wife just had their first child.
Oh, that's
so
exciting.
He's got to be on a little extra cloud there,
oh.
right? So you always want to have a big first game. So
that's nice.
I see – all the Bengals receivers had a bad game. It wasn't just AJ. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that was – I think that was the game plan in general that, that failed and not – it was pouring down rain in Pittsburgh. I mean, that was a tough, tough game to put up some passing yards. So, yeah, I think AJ's a safe wide receiver one play this week.
Okay, good. Yeah. Matt Carpenter had his first child in the middle of the season, had to take some paternity leave, but as soon as he came back, he was on a hot streak for – a couple weeks, and that's what I'm hoping for AJ.
There it is. Yeah. You heard it here first. That's the these are the things that we're going to bring you on the on the fantasy forecast from the tower. We give you a bird's eye view that most people don't see or mm-hmm. don't take the time to see.
A hawk's eye view.
A hawk's eye view of things. There it is. All right, so we like to close out every show so with a what's the deal with? Huh? Okay. So, mm-hmm. you know, what is the deal with? So, I want to know, what's the deal with Terrell Pryor's passion? Yeah. He's the number one receiver right now in Cleveland by default through injuries, okay? And when the quarterback started dropping this week or the past couple weeks in Cleveland, they asked him, the media asked him, hey, would you play quarterback for the team? And he said, this is the quote, for this city, this coaching staff, I will do anything for us to win, anything. Cut off a finger. Do whatever I have to do. That was earlier in the week. And he's followed that up with saying he'll die on the field if he needs to.
Okay.
So that's great. The passion's there, but he's got six catches on the year, and he had three catches last week on 10 targets. So how about keep your fingers, just catch a ball.
Yeah.
What's the deal, Terrell?
Don't have to take a bullet. Don't have to bleed out. Just catch the ball.
Just catch the ball. Prove your self and your passion that way. So that's what's the deal with your passion of willing to give up a digit, Terrell Pryor.
I appreciate that energy, though.
I do.
Passion for the game.
Yes.
I'm going to have to say, what's the deal with, again, I, for some reason, I'm a masochist, and I like to watch Dean Blandino's officiating videos that he puts out every week to recap all of the bad, incorrect, terrible calls, questionable calls that were made, or reaffirm the ones they believe are correct. I guess that's actually more of the purpose of it. But it still seems like the catch, no catch thing has made absolutely zero progress. And in fact, I remember they convened a committee in December of, you know, the manager's committee, and they were going to make a change. They said, we're committed to this, and then nothing came out of that. And I'm just shocked as to why. I don't know. I don't get it. A catch is more confusing than ever. I enjoy listening to him try to justify it and having to get all of the verbiage and language in there. Like, oh, see, clearly he was not established as a runner in that one and didn't tuck. But come on. Come on.
It hurts the integrity of the game for first and foremost. It's so frustrating for fans to continue to hear this. And absolutely, you had a committee to fix this. And the committee pretty much said, well, we've convened and nothing's changed.
Did they, like, just give themselves a bonus for that? I feel like Roger Goodell just got a bonus for convening this committee.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure.
And then nothing happened.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the deal with that? I agree. And this has been going on for what feels like ages. And every year you see one or two big instances where mm-hmm. it decides the outcome of a game.
Yeah.
The officiating as a whole, and you hate to be that fan that blames the officials, and so I won't even point out any Bengals games, mm-hmm. but just in general, I feel the officiating has just been subpar for several years now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this has recently changed, but for the longest time, these are part-time jobs for these guys. I mean, so you have millions of dollars at stakes for these players the endorsements that they get as they play on teams that do well and just so much at stake. And to put a part-time person in charge of that just really seems odd to me. And I think maybe they've just turned it into a full-time gig. I can't remember if I read something about that or not.
I don't think last I heard it was still a part-time thing, that there was some people perhaps that it's a full-time job, but these guys aren't like working at the corner store either. They are lawyers and some of them doctors, and it's like full-time job. And then, yes, you're supposed to go out and be on Sunday Night Football in this high-pressure situation and make all the right calls. It is kind of ridiculous that a billion-dollar league doesn't want to have full-time employees to protect the integrity of their product. That is a little disconcerting to me. And, like, I think especially I don't want to blame the refs, because I think it's more of the rules and the verbiage and the way they're written that need to be changed. So I think it's them trying to interpret bad rules and then enforce them. And unfortunately, there's no progress made on that yet.
That's a great, and that would explain the lack of consistency from game to game that you see, where one crew will call one thing and then you flip over to another channel and mm-hmm. you see the same thing happen and it's a completely different call yeah. altogether. So that's a good analysis of what's happening with the failure of our refs. Yeah. And there's nothing worse than losing your fantasy football matchup because of a bad call.
Oh, it hurts.
I know it hurts the players. You just spent 3 hours laid your blood, sweat, and tears, maybe fingers if you're Terrell Pryor.
Yeah.
But it still hurts more to lose your fake football game due to these low-life refs. Mm-hmm. So get it together, refs. We're tired of losing fantasy football matchups because of you.
There you go. That's how we prioritize. That's why, you know, you should listen, because right here it's like fantasy football below regular football, everything else.
Everything else. Yeah. That's right. No. Any parting words, Lydia, before we break for the week?
No. Thank you for listening, putting up with myself. Travis was good, but I was going to say putting up with me.
Good luck in all of your fantasy matchups, whether you are in one team or 20, as mm-hmm. I actually have a colleague that plays
How
20
do you even
leagues.
Survive?
I don't know. There's a good debate that we'll have to have later in okay. the season on how many teams can you be into where then you can't really boast about winning the championship.
That's a good – I will say I once remarked that it seems – women, and I don't want to stereotype, but it seems like more men are in multiple leagues than there are women in multiple leagues. And how I once compared it to relationships. Sometimes guys have multiple ones going on and invest less time in them. And hey, this girl's going to overcommit, at least myself. Sometimes I get way too emotionally invested and overcommit to one.
Men or teams, I'm not sure.
Exactly.
Right. All right. And with that, we are going to break for the huddle. We'll see you next week on Fantasy Football Forecast from the Tower.